The Scroll, Chapter 3, Beginning. Qohelet tentatively scratched out a sentence. I, Qohelet, ruled over Israel and Jerusalem, and I devoted myself to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. Benjamin gave a soft grunt of affirmation as he slipped the bowl from the table. The door eased shut, and Qohelet read the sentence aloud to the empty room. His voice faltered as he realized anyone below the window might hear the words. As the chief collector and archivist of the king's library, he truly had read more books than the king, for the ruler was often too busy with matters of state, building projects, and his family obligations to reflect on the ancient texts. But the days of having the king's library at his fingertips were long gone. Now his entire library was housed in a cracked leather bucket that hung from an iron hook above his desk. Inside the bucket, safe from the rodents that scurried about the apartment at night, were three precious scrolls. Actually, two and a half, for much of the Genesis scroll had been burned away. Only Benjamin's quick reaction had saved it from complete ruin, a noble act, but one with dire consequences. It was ironic that the ruined scroll was now in his possession, for it also ruined his career as the king's archivist. Qohelet, as he'd been known in the library, was the title for someone who gathered writings together. His job in the archives to collect and protect the wisdom of the ages. Scrolls and tablets arrived daily, and it was a massive task to catalog them all, decide which ones should be translated for the king's permanent collection, and store others away until there was more time to assess their value. The charred end of the Genesis scroll's wooden roller stuck out of the bucket like an invitation, but Qohelet had long since memorized every word of the fragile document, right up to the account of Abraham leaving his homeland, for that was where the blackened edges of the scroll now ended. Like many ancient scrolls, Genesis took its name from the opening word in the text, the beginning. It was in the beginning that mankind had received the mandate to work the earth, to tend it, and to enjoy the fruits of their labors. From that point on, every human heart beat with a desire to make something from the earth, to grow food, to carve a piece of wood, bring fish to market, or press grapes into wine. Humanity had been intrinsically bound to the earth. But the desire to work the earth now ran headlong into the reality of the thorns and thistles that plagued creation. Humans were trapped between working to move their affairs forward and yet finding problems constantly thwarting them. As a result, everyone was trying to use the earth's limited resources to compete with others, to climb higher and make something of themselves. But life under the sun would never provide the satisfaction of getting ahead. As Qohelet leaned forward to touch his pen to ink, a sharp ache in his back pushed a low groan from his lips. It was a fitting sound for the words he now painstakingly scratched onto the vellum. What a frustrating task God has given to mankind. I have examined everything people work at under the sun, and it is all as futile as chasing the wind, for we could never straighten everything that is twisted, nor could we even begin to count all that is lacking. He gingerly eased back into his chair, and the morning breeze slipped through the open window and ruffled the edge of the scroll. Chasing after the wind had become his favorite metaphor for the futility of all work. Anyone who had spent even one summer in the scorching heat of the city could relate to that image. The thought of going out to the hills to capture a cool breeze and bring it home was indeed as futile as going to work and expecting to gain something of lasting benefit. No one could deny that despite our best efforts, human achievement always ended up both twisted and lacking. No sooner was something constructed than it required a continual commitment of time and energy just to keep it in a decent state of repair. Everyone understood that the thorns and thistles were not just for those working the fields. Problems and shortages overran every human occupation. Even his chosen field of education was subject to this futility. He had devoted his entire life to the pursuit of knowledge, fully believing that he would come to a complete understanding of how the world worked if he just studied long and hard enough. Yet all he had discovered was just how little he actually knew for certain. By setting up knowledge as a goal unto itself, he had also set himself up for great disappointment. His relentless pursuit of knowledge left him only with an overwhelming sense of being adrift in the world without a shred of certainty to guide him. The realization stuck to him like a twilight shadow, lengthening with each passing year. Even though I acquired more wisdom than anyone who had ever ruled in Jerusalem, when I applied myself to a complete understanding of wisdom and knowledge, I discovered that I too was chasing after the wind, for with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. Grief. the anguish of the word flowed from his heart through his cramped hand and onto the scroll. People had inflicted terrible atrocities on others through the history of the world. When one considered that the soil of the earth was drenched in the blood of the innocents, it was no wonder that the land constantly sprouted thorns and thistles. Angry voices echoing across the empty marketplace pulled Qohelet from his thoughts. Caleb was shouting at his wife and making a grand fuss. He was in a foul mood, for once again he had stayed up late into the night, drinking whatever someone else would pay for. Caleb was a man with more ideas than good sense. He desperately wanted to get rich, but every attempt at a new business failed, and he would try to find solace in his wine. Qohelet could relate to those feelings of failure and the need to bury those unpleasant feelings beneath other distractions. His own disillusionment with the pursuit of wisdom had prompted him to set aside his books and seek out more of life's pleasures. Stepping from the dim recesses of the library archives, he had turned his natural curiosity to exploring the social life of the court. He cautiously approached the people and parties he had formerly viewed with disdain to investigate what they might provide. Much to his surprise, the courtiers welcomed him with open arms, for he was an interesting diversion from their normal social fare. He lent their parties an intellectual status, and he quickly became one of the most sought-after guests at events within the palace walls. A man of literature was in their midst, someone who could tell them of the distant past and of new ideas from far-off lands. What they did not know was that he had never traveled more than 2 days' journey from Jerusalem. He had not even dipped his toe in the seas that brought his precious scrolls and tablets to him. His experiment in palace life went to his head, like the wine that flowed in the king's courts. Women who had never noticed him in the past, charming, passionate, and beautiful women, sought him out. But the novelty faded as quickly as the effects of the wine, for he simply could not shut off his mind and follow the revelers down pathways he knew would never satisfy his quest. He could clearly see there was no lasting gain in the pursuit of pleasure, any more than there was gain in the pursuit of wisdom. His sense of alienation slowly returned, and he had already lost his taste for their parties and was daydreaming about his scrolls when he met Mariah. That chance meeting opened a door to a potent new level of exploration into life's physical pleasures and also its agonizing heartaches. He pulled his thoughts from the past and found himself chewing on the tip of his pen, a bitter taste to go with even more bitter memories. He wiped the saliva on his sleeve. Mariah and their ill-fated relationship were best left out of this scroll, at least for now. A simple summary of those long-lost days, along with his conclusions, would suffice. As he wrote, the scratching of the pen on parchment felt like he was picking the scab from an old wound. So I decided to try pleasure to see what it might do for me. With wisdom as my guide, I tested the effects of wine and embraced folly, but that also proved to be unsuccessful. Pleasure, I said, is futile, for it cannot provide anything of lasting benefit. Lasting benefit spoke directly to the heart of the matter, for although the parties were enjoyable in the moment, they could not provide anything of value that would carry over into a new day. The pursuit of pleasure could not answer his question about what people could gain from all their labor. Joy was found in the journey, but pleasure failed as a destination. Those who chased after pleasure were grinding at a wheel that would spin endlessly until their lives were completely worn away. His investigation into the pleasures of life came to a complete end at the same time that the king announced a major building program at the palace. The library was to be moved to make room for a new bathhouse for the king's wives, and much to Daniel's irritation, Qohelet was given the task of designing and overseeing the building of the new library. His need to forget Mariah drove him forward, and he eagerly researched other great libraries while working with the craftsmen who would build according to his exact specifications. Exchanging the world of clay tablets and parchment for stone blocks and timber opened his eyes to the pleasure of creating something that had not existed before. The thrill of drawing a design and seeing it grow into a solid reality quickly became addictive. Sleep was a waste of precious planning time, and he greeted each morning with eager anticipation. He thoroughly enjoyed interacting with the creativity and talent others brought to the project. Through his conversations with the craftsmen working on the new library, he discovered that even for the laborer working for his daily bread, a pride of craftsmanship still went into shaping a stone, making a fishing net, or weaving a basket. For those higher up the social ladder, the creative drive turned to art or architecture, and the latest king certainly was no exception. Since coming to the throne, the palace and the city had been awash in a constant flow of building projects. Monuments that the previous kings had erected in their own memory were torn down to make room for those commemorating the new king, Qohelet chuckled. At times, the great leaders of the human race acted more like dogs marking their territory than noble rulers leading their people. But the king wasn't the only one pursuing a lasting legacy. A peasant's house was humble, and it was also built in the hopes of extending their influence beyond the span of a lifetime. All people realized that their days were quickly dwindling away, and the lengthening shadow of death pushed them forward to make something of themselves while they were still alive. I was determined to do something worthwhile with the few days of life I was granted on the earth, so I went to work on many great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I created gardens and parks full of fruit trees and dug wells so my orchards would flourish. I acquired male and female servants and had others who were born in my house. I owned more cattle and sheep than anyone in Jerusalem. I amassed silver and gold and collected royal treasures from far-off lands. I enjoyed music and the company of beautiful women. The king's life was the envy of the common folk. His great accomplishments gave him an uncommon hold over the hearts and minds of his subjects, for their lives seemed insignificant compared to their monarch. In an odd way, his successes made them feel like they were part of something greater themselves. Very few had ever set foot in the palace or in any of the other fine buildings scattered around the city, and yet that distance only added to the power of those feelings. If only they knew that even the king felt the same way as they did after completing a project. I became greater than anyone who had ever lived in Jerusalem. With wisdom at my side, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired and refused my heart no pleasure. Yet when I looked back over all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, it was as futile as chasing after the wind, for I had gained nothing of lasting benefit under the sun. The only reward for all my labor was the joy my heart found while I was working. Qohelet pushed back from the scroll and stretched his back. People could find great joy while they worked on a project, but the satisfaction did not last. Up at the palace, a great celebration was held after a project was completed, but those enjoying the feast were closing a door that could never be opened again. They could look back with fondness on what had been achieved, but the pleasure of working together on that particular task could not be lived out again. When the sun rose the next day, a new project had to be found so they could once again enjoy the daily rewards of their efforts. A burst of noise from across the plaza thrust through his window. A dog barked furiously and someone laughed and called out across the plaza. Eli's fruit cart had collapsed again, and Qohelet could hear people telling Eli yet again that if he fixed it properly, once and for all, this wouldn't keep happening. Qohelet smiled. He had been concentrating so hard on the task at hand that he had not heard the market coming to life. It was time to embrace the new day, to go down and earn his daily bread. Although there was some satisfaction in writing down his thoughts, his friends were waiting. The scroll could dry in the sun until Benjamin returned to roll it up and store it away in the bucket.